All right. What's going on in Boston? You always got to bring up the Bruins at least once a show.
Yeah, not quite as often as you bring up yourself.
Thanks for being here, everybody. I appreciate the support. Tim won't be around anymore. Everybody, welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. It's November 6th, Tim. It's a Wednesday morning. What did you get up to last night? Did you watch any of the election recap?
No, I went to bed early. There's kind of no point. You had to be up till 5 in the morning when the official calls were made, you know? Yeah. So you can follow it, but it's just not fun for me to chase that stuff. So no, I went to bed early, woke up early, and here I am.
Talking to my family who lives in Canada. They stayed up till 3 a.m. watching it. Isn't that crazy?
Wow. That
they're more invested than I am. I checked. You know, I kept my eyes on it. But like you got to go to bed at some point. You got to get up early. So I'm not going to comment, you know, on the outcome. I don't think we need to dip our toe in the political water, but I'm 2 for 3 in elections, Tim. I've only been an American citizen for the last like 12, 13 years, I think. So I've been a part of 3 elections. 2 for 3.
It's funny, I voted more than you have. I turned 18 like the month before the 08 election. So I just barely made that one.
Were you a part of the Obama wave?
Not going to comment, John. Let's talk about
People need to know about our religion. They need to know about our politics. That's it.
And our relationships, apparently. The slack is I can't go a day without getting questions about Julia and what's happening there.
Loretta's all over you. Like, when are you going to pop the question?
And you're all over me too with your, I don't know, what do you call it? Clip art design that you're doing on all the pictures of me.
I'm having some fun with Microsoft Paint. I think that's the program that I'm using. So Tim, if you're not in our Slack and Patreon, you're missing out. It's a lot of fun. Tim was getting on me to put a picture in there. So I put a picture of Tim. He's like real funny. And so I edited it. Now it's Tim with sunglasses, and Tim put a picture up of him and his girlfriend. And I had some fun with that, editing that. It was a lot of fun. You know, we're just joking around in our Slack. So if you haven't joined yet, we've got a good group of people. We got Riley, we got Nate Fresh, Johnny Boy, Loretta, we got Matt, we got Ryan, we got Matt's, John, lots of people, a couple Johns in there. It's growing by the day. So yeah, check it out. Go to our Patreon, join up. It's cheap. It's a good time. But anyways, moving on. We're doing some deep dives today. Talking about some teams. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Instead of just doing carte blanche, throwing everything at the wall and see what sticks, we're going to focus on a few teams. You know, every couple of weeks, do a deep dive on a team, a deep dive on a topic. And today, we're doing the Minnesota Wild and the Dallas Stars. A big Central Division deep dive because we did a vote in our Slack channel. I think we might have did it on social media. The strongest division in the NHL. And across the board, it was the Central Division. Looking at the league, Eastern Conference is slowing down a little bit. The Western Conference seems to be improving, and especially the Central Division when you have the Winnipeg Jets out of the gates extremely fast, the Minnesota Wild winning, the Dallas Stars, a Stanley Cup contender every single year now, the Utah Hockey Club all of a sudden spending some money and winning some games, the St. Louis Blues having a resurgent year, Nashville Predators stinking it up, but still a dangerous team. The same can be said for the Colorado Avalanche, who are dealing with injury issues, as Tim likes to say, every time we talk about them, but they're still a dangerous team. And then the upstart Chicago Blackhawks, who are slowly but surely building around Connor Bedard and trying to revitalize that team. So there's no easy out in the Central Division as compared to the Atlantic or the Pacific or the Metropolitan, where you have some teams that it's like, okay, we're taking this night off. But I did a deep dive into the Minnesota Wild. My first NHL team. I signed there right out of college, played for the Houston Aeros for a few years, got my first big call-up just before Christmas in 2008, and I stuck. Did not get sent down once. I didn't play that game up and down minors to the NHL. I just stuck right away. The GM knew they had a GM, and they did not want to risk losing me on waivers. So I was there for good. They didn't even let me play. Do you know this? I wanted to go back after the season because we had a big playoff push when I was there. We missed out on the playoffs by 1 point. I think last game of the season we won, but the other team we were chasing won as well. 1 point we missed out. I think we got 9, 89, 99 points, something. We were really good. The Houston Arrows were good. I asked the GM at the time, I think it was Chuck Fletcher, I'm like, hey, can I go back and play with the Houston Arrows? He said, no, you're too valuable. We don't want you to get hurt. So, hand of God, he wouldn't let me go and play with Houston. So I had to drive my sorry behind back to Houston with my Chevy Silverado, pick up all my stuff. I watched a playoff game and I left, I think, a couple days later. I wanted to go and play for the Arrows. They said, no, you are one of the key cogs to this future of this franchise. And I played one more year in Minnesota and they gassed me. So what are you going to do?
Even though the Wild were out, he still wouldn't let you play a couple more games?
Yeah. Yeah. They said, no, we don't want you to get hurt. I'm serious.
It's not like you were like a high draft pick, though. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, yes, you were important, but the chances of getting hurt were low. So why not just like, it's not like they had invested high draft capital in you, you know?
Whatever. Listen, Tim, when you have this gem.
Listen, Tim, you've never been valued by anyone the way that I was. So
well, Julia values you. But when you invest in something, you got to protect your investment. And that's why today's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. It would have been excellent if we would have had a sponsor there to transition into it. But we don't. Because we're just like, just. If you have a company and you want to sponsor an episode, let us know. We're working our tail up here. Anyways, back to the Minnesota Wild. The theme of my deep dive is, you know the song, if you're going through hell, keep on moving, don't slow down? That's the Minnesota Wild. The last 3 to 4 years, they've been in cap hell. And they've been chugging along, Billy Guerin doing what he can to get this team into a competitive situation to just be relevant. Where they were and where they are today, they should have no business competing in this league. Currently, they have $15 million in dead money this year. $15 million. There's an $88 million cap space. So that means you're chopping $15 million right off that. You can only spend $73 million. They have two and change spending. So they're only spending $70 million this year. The other team spending $70 million this year, Tim, the Flames, the Ducks, and the Blue Jackets. The Flames are off to a good start. They're cooling down a little bit. The Ducks and the Blue Jackets are train wrecks. Every other team in the NHL spends at least $80 million plus. The teams that contend are all over $88 million. They're burying guys in the LTIR. They're getting salary cap relief somehow, some way. But they're contending. And then you look at the Minnesota Wild. Top five in the NHL, superstar up front, superstar on the back end, solid players surrounding them. And they're doing this with essentially $16, $17 million that they've not spent. It's an amazing job by Billy Guerin. And they're doing it in the strongest division in the NHL, like we talked about before, the Central Division. Why are they doing this? Lots of reasons. Lots of reasons. The main reason is Kirill Kaprizov. Have you heard of him, Tim?
I sure have.
The guy's an absolute stud. I looked into it. I looked into his stats. He was drafted, you know, in 2018, I believe, in the fifth round by the Wild. They just took a flyer on him, some kid in Russia. Maybe he'll come over. Maybe he won't. GMs, when they're doing their scouting, when they're drafting, once you get to the fourth, fifth, sixth round, you take flyers on guys in the KHL, guys in Russia. He was probably 17 years old. What's going to happen? Is he going to come over? We don't know. Let's take a flyer on this kid. All of a sudden, he comes over 4 years ago. Lightning out of a bottle. Just killing it ever since he made the NHL his first year. First full year in the NHL, 2021-22, Tim. 81 games, he puts up 108 points. Are you bonkers? 108 points his first full year in the NHL? That's absolutely crazy. Billy Guerin sees this. He goes, oh, hey-o. We got to lock this guy up right away to the negotiation table. Locks him in. $9 million, 5 years. At the time, people are like, oh, we don't know, Billy. We don't know. That's a lot of money for this kid. It's a bargain right now. Because I'm going to pose this question to you before we move on to him. Has Kirill Kaprizov, based on his first four full years in the NHL, 21-22, he got 108 points. 22-23, he got 75 points in 67 games. 23-24, he had 96 points in 75 games. In those 3 years, 47 goals, 40 goals, 46 goals. This year, his fourth year, he's got 21 points in 7 games. Has he gone from being a star? There's a lot of stars in this league. To being a rarefied air superstar. I'm talking Draisaitl. I'm talking Kucherov. I'm talking McKinnon. And now Kaprizov. Superstars, Tim. Is he in that category now?
Oh, he is. Yeah. I was just thinking while you were talking, I think he might have even surpassed. And I don't want to base this on 10, 12 games and say who's hot and who's not. But like, I think he might have surpassed like the Pasternak's of the world, right? Like Marner, like Panarin, those, I mean, Marner for sure. But like those types of players, I think he's just between that level and the next level. Like he, maybe not quite MacKinnon Matthews level, but yeah, he's a stud. And I don't mean any disrespect, like we always say, to the Boldies and Zuccarellos of the world, but what Kaprizov has done is prove that he can generate offense on his own. He can be the best player on the ice for either team, and he make the players around him better. But you don't, he doesn't need a Draisaitl to be McDavid. He's Kaprizov all on his own. So, and again, he absolutely certainly benefits from good players around him. But as this cap situation opened up, like I'm sure you're going to get into, and they bring in more talent, this could be really scary.
Well, it could be an absolutely deadly team. And I think you nailed it on his head. The first 3 years of his career, Ryan Hartman as a centerman. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, no offense to Ryan Hartman, but now the Minnesota Wild, they've added depth and they put Ryan Hartman where he should go, which is the third line. That's where he belongs. He's a good, hardworking, kind of sandpaper type player. And he's playing on the first line with arguably one of the best players on the planet. And you put him with the Matt Zuccarello, who is creative. I love Zucks. You know, I played with him. He's been on the show. Tim, he's 36. Like, he's a journeyman forward who's bounced around the league the last few years. He's great, absolutely fantastic. But again, he's not a Mitch Martin. You know what I mean? He's not one of these guys who's a Robin to a Batman. He's a good player, but he's not going to be confused with a star in this league by any sense of the word. And the great thing about Kaprizov is the things we've harped on superstars before. McDavid doesn't try in the back end. He gets lost at times. Evgeny Malkin, he just shuts it down for large swaths of time. Don't poke the bear and wake him up. Kaprizov loves the game. He loves to be on the ice. He would play 25, 30 minutes if the coach would let him. He plays strong in his own end. There's no shifts off for this guy. He sets that bar high. And when you have a superstar player who does that, it's contagious. Everybody else has to do it. Because if I'm sitting there looking at him and I'm Matt Boldy, young kid, trying to find his way in this league, I'm like, holy crap, my $9 million superstar, 45-plus goal Russian forward friend is just busting his ass all over the ice, and I'm going to, you know, take a shift off. That's not going to fly. It's just fantastic. Tim, this year, he's got 8 multi-point games.
Already.
Yeah. Only 12 games. 8 multi-point games. This guy is fantastic. He's put the Wild in a great spot for the playoffs. They are on pace for 130-plus points. Last year, they had 87. And it's not because of Kaprizov only. He's been doing this consistently throughout his career. Why are they so good? It's the depth. The depth is stepping up. And why is that? It's the same cast as last year. They haven't really changed the players much. It's how Coach John Hines is distributing him. It's how he's putting him out there. He's putting him in a place to succeed. He's moved around the lineup a little bit. The second line has been solid with Matt Boldy, Joel Eriksson Ek, and Marcus Johansson. They've been playing really good hockey. Their third line is one of the best third lines in the game. Marcus Foligno, Freddie Gaudreau, and Ryan Hart. All three of those guys are pricks to play against. They hit, they fight, they score. They get in on the forecheck, they play the right way, and their fourth line has been fantastic. Lauko and Trenna. Trenna's a big moose coming in from Nashville. I like the way, like, that guy plays this game. So their forwards are deep. That's been a huge revelation for this team for years and years and years. They've just been, hopefully Kirill can score 3 or else we're not going to win. Right, Tim?
It was. Yeah. And I was just remembering too, like, so we previewed this division over the summer, and I think we both had the Wild missing the playoffs, maybe squeaking in, not being one of the better teams in the league. And this is due to more than just Kaprizov. But I remember too what Garen said, because they're talking about extending him. He's under contract through next season. So this year plus another season. But he said no one's going to pay him more or give him more term than we will. Like, that's how important he is to this franchise. And we even said, like, I think you have to make the case that there's not a team in the league that relies more on a single player than the Wild do on him.
Yeah,
I'd be hard pressed to think of another example like that.
The percentage of goals that he's a part of for this team, it's him and McDavid, I think, are the two highest that they rely on for offense. But it's changing a little bit this year. They beat the Leafs the other day. They shut them out. Kaprizov had no points, and they still managed to win the game. So they're finding different ways to win. And I think that's hugely attributed to John Hines. And it got me thinking how much a coach just can make a huge difference. Because they had Dean Evason, good coach, you know, great guy from all accounts, but just not pushing the right buttons, not challenging the teams. There was reports that he just didn't even go in the locker room between periods during the game, which is bizarre to me to think a coach wouldn't want to just have some alterations, you know, game plan edits throughout the game. And he just let the players do their thing. He didn't want to dip his toe in there to ruin the vibe. It's like, buddy, you got 87 points in the year. You're going to miss the playoffs by 20 points. You should mix things up. And Hines is there. The team plays harder for him for whatever reason. The one issue is their PK is terrible. They're still working on that, but that should sort itself out with the players that they have. They'll figure that out in the end. But Kaprizov, much improved. Depth, much improved. Brock Faber, one of the best young defensemen in the league. A huge deal now, Jared Spurgeon is back. This is a guy who was relied upon heavily before he got hurt last season. I think he played 16 games last year, out injured, missed the first few games of this season, coming back. He's a big deal for this team. You can ease up a little bit. Jacob Middleton having a fantastic start to the season. We were talking about him, Tim, one day, not on the show, how he's just scoring goals. He's leading the team in scoring at one point, or defense in scoring. He's just playing fantastic. The ever-consistent Jonas Brodin never gets accolades at all. Just steady as she goes. Reminds me of a young Nicholas Hjalmarsson, who I played with in Chicago. And then you got the Moose, Zach Bogosian, on the back end with John Merrill. A good 5-6 pairing. Well, you can really pair up with anybody, but they're good against the third and fourth lines of the opposing team. They have a good balance of defensemen. Puck movers, you got some snot throwers who can really chuck the knuckles and hit if you need them to. You got some steady as she goes, all situations defensemen. It's a nice balance. You know what I mean, Tim? You don't see that very often. These guys, any situation, you can throw a defenseman out there and they're going to succeed. You can kind of pick and choose. It's a beautiful thing. But the biggest reason I think this team is really turn the corner is a goaltender. Filip Gustavsson signed a bigger deal last year to stay with the Minnesota Wild. Billy was trying to get rid of him in the offseason. He was so bad last year. Yeah, he's just trying to give this guy away. Well, came to camp, lost some pounds, some LBs, a little more motivated, trying to retain that starter's job. Last year, he pretty much split with Marc-Andre Fleury. I think he got 45. Marc-Andre Fleury got 37. This is my net, he said. I'm a young kid. I want to be here for my career. He's been playing great. Top five in all goalie statistics across the board for guys who have started 8-9 game starters. He's been great. So all the chatter about him being traded, all the chatter about, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury being the guy. No, this is Filip Gustavsson's net. This is his team. Marc-Andre Fleury is a fun backup. He'll get the start in Pittsburgh and, you know, wave goodbye and all this stuff. When it comes to the playoffs, when it comes to important games, it's Gustavsson's net and it's his team. And he's been playing fantastic. He even scored a goal with him.
Yeah, I like when you see a guy that is, you know, wasn't really finding success in other situations, whether it was, you know, being called up or just not fitting in with a certain group, being on bad teams, and finally in the right situation and the stars align and you get to show how good you really are when you're not hampered by other things. And I think that's what we're seeing with Gustavsson. He was, you know, came up from through Belleville. He was on Ottawa, obviously a really poor team. He was okay last year, not great, but he's looking really good this year.
He was bad last year.
Continue that. They're going to be in good shape. So I think the thing I keep thinking about is just the cap situation and that coming off the books as the season progresses. If we get, you know, after the holidays and toward the end of the year, end of the season, we start thinking about how they're going to spend that money. And that's going to be a lot of fun to think about the UFAs, the RFAs. They can go make some offers. They can sign some big guys if they decide they want to compete right away. It'll be a lot of fun to kind of play armchair GM with the team with basically $15 million to spend. Really cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys who are good who are going to be entering into free agency. They'll have about $20 million, $30 million to spend. I haven't done the math on that, but they'll have a lot of money. And that kind of dovetails into my point of why they're here. It's Billy Guerin. We talked to Derek Stepan a couple months ago about Billy Guerin. He just said the guy, he knows what he's doing. He's got his kind of ear to the ground. He knows what's going on in his organization. He has his fingers in every aspect of the team, whether it's on the ice, whether it's in the offices, whether it's in the marketing, whether it's here, there, or everywhere. Billy Guerin really knows what's going on with his franchise. And he did this smart move, risky move for a first-time GM. He formed this team by locking in talent before they priced themselves out of the market. So he saw a guy like Matt Boldy, young kid coming out of the University of Minnesota. We got to get him locked up. Okay. 7 years, $7 million per year, $49 million. Risky signing. We criticize it. Everybody criticize it. It's paying off pretty good. Kirill Kaprizov, he signed him after 16 games coming out of Russia. 5 years, $9 million. Joel Eriksson Ek, same thing, 8 years, $42 million. This unknown Swedish center, well, what is he going to pan out to be? He locks him in. Brock Faber locks that guy in, 8 years, $68 million. Seems like a lot. He's probably worth 12 in 3 years. You know what I mean? Like this is a great contract. The cap's going up. This is a steal. And then he does the lower end contracts too. The 3-4-5 D man, the second, third, fourth line forwards. He's not just doing this for the first line forwards, the first line defenseman. Jacob Middleton, 4 years, $17 million. It's a great contract. This guy's a stay-at-home defenseman. He does everything right. He's putting pucks in the net this year offensively. That's a good value for him. Freddie Gaudreau, Frederick Gaudreau, third, fourth line guy, 5 years, $10 million. When have you ever heard a term in length like that for a contract? It's unheard of. Usually these guys sign 2 year deals, 3 year deals max. He locks him in at 5 years, $10 million. Marcus Foligno, 4 years, $4 million. This guy could easily be making $6 million, Marcus Foligno, in the right situation.
I mean, that's the part that I think is the most exciting when you think about the cap situation. It's not that they have a bunch of money and a bunch of guys to sign. They have a bunch of money and all their core players locked up. You know what I mean? Like, this is all gravy on top with this extra cap space. They're going to have so much the room to play with, and 90% of the roster locked up for long-term deals. So yeah, they've done really, really well. And it's a good example of a guy that is not just skating by based on his NHL reputation, like some other GMs in the league. He's proven it every week, it sounds like, and they just keep getting better.
Yeah. So people are saying, oh, is this a flash in the pan? Are these guys going to come down to earth, this and that and the other? I don't think they will. They've played 12 games, 10% of the season. They're playing absolutely fantastic. And next thing you know, it's going to be Thanksgiving here in the United States. And they always say, if you're in a playoff spot come Thanksgiving, it's like a 70 to 75% chance you'll be in the playoffs at the end of the year. So I'm buying it. I think this is a great start for the Minnesota Wild. They've constructed this team really good. John Hines has been playing really good hockey. And they will be fun to watch at the deadline because they will add pieces. They will have a couple bucks to spend. And don't look now. This central division that we thought at the start of the season was going to be Nashville, Colorado, Dallas. It's Winnipeg, Minnesota. The Great White North rearing its ugly head, dominating the central, taking the NHL by storm. So it's fun stuff, Tim. That is my thesis on the Minnesota Wild. The floor is yours, Wisberger.
That was great. I'm going to talk about the Dallas Stars. And this is the team that's very similar in a lot of ways. In terms of where they are in the standings and how the team is built, but they're very different in how they got here. So I'm going to start with the expression that we heard from Matt Duchene. We also heard, you know, through the playoff run last year, and that's a little less for a lot more. And Duchene told us on the show, and if I remember, I'll add that interview to our show notes in case you haven't listened to it. He talked about the idea. It was on their wall, and it's like each of the guys is going to just do a little bit more and get a little bit less for a better result as a team. So it's not about individual stats anymore, but all the guys pulling the rope, evenly doing what needs to be done, doing their job, and focusing on the team success over individual success, which sounds obvious. It sounds like a thing that it should be easy to buy in, but it's not. There's a lot of egos. There's a lot of different coaches that have different mindsets, and he had basically shared how much the whole team was in on it. So many of us, I think, including myself last year, I think I had the Stars versus Canes and Stars taking it all in the Cup final last year, but I think most of us thought that the Stars were at least headed to the Western Conference Finals and probably the Cup, only to lose in the Oilers, to the Oilers in six games. They ran into a hot team. They let up a lot of goals in that series, and disappointing, I think. But if you think, okay, well, Wyatt Johnson had 16 points. He was tied with Jason Robertson, who had 16 points. Miro Heiskanen had 16 points. Ottinger was great. You saw a resurgence from Ben and Sagan that you hadn't seen in years. They were putting up, you know, stats to a point that we just haven't seen them in 3, 4, 5 years. Disappointing, but good things are coming. You got the veteran stepping up. You got the young kids who have finally arrived. This is going to be a dangerous team. And here we are now. It's kind of a weird situation. If you look at some of the stats, Matt Duchene leads the team with 15 points. It's not Robertson. It's not Hintz. It's not Johnston. It's Matt Duchene, 34, I believe he is. You have Jason Robertson, the guy who had 109 points just a couple of seasons ago, only has 7 points so far in 11 games. Rupe Hintz, again, back-to-back 37 goal seasons, 75 plus points, who seemed to be the next superstar in the making in this league, the next goal scorer who is, you know, 40 plus threat every year. He only has 8 points in 11 games. And Miro Heiskanen, one of the top, you know, defensemen in the league, we put him on the same tier as a Fox, McAvoy, you know, that level, and Bouchard, he only has 4 points. So you look at those individual stats and you kind of think, geez, these guys have taken a step back. They're not as good. And yet the Stars are 7-4 right now, which is good for third in the Central. And there's even a little bit of a caveat with that because they played in Finland last week and they played 2 games there. They lost both of them to the Florida Panthers. They allowed 10 goals in 2 games on that trip. But again, those trips are so weird. You're traveling. It's international. You're doing stuff at night. You're doing stuff in the morning. There's nerves. There's excitement. A lot of these guys, including Heiskanen, were playing in front of their families over in Europe. It's hard to read too much into those games. And so maybe they would have lost both those games even if they weren't in Finland. But they were. There's always a little bit of weirdness there. Because before that road trip, they were 7-2. They had the 5th best goal differential in the entire league, and they were second in the division. So here they are now 3, only 2 games. Take those 2 out, and they're still very, very good. Which kind of asks the question, how are they doing it despite their stars putting up fewer numbers, even pedestrian, you might say? And that goes back to that expression of a little less for a lot more. So the first thing that you're going to see is that they're running completely balanced lines, which is something that almost no other team in the league can match them on. We've talked about this for probably 2 years straight now. The depth that they have, the balance between the old, the prime, and the young players, and just being able to roll their depth line after line, just basically every single night, is something that's one of their greatest strengths that most teams and most coaches around the league would just die for. And then you dig into the stats a little more and you realize there's a perfectly reasonable explanation that creates some funky stat lines, but overall team success. Like Jason Robertson, only 7 points. He's on the 3rd line now. Their 3rd line has him and Wyatt Johnston on it. And by the way, don't forget Jason Robertson also had surgery on his foot this offseason. He missed all of training camp. He missed most of the preseason. I think a slow start was to be expected. And even with the 3rd line, you know, assignment, he's still playing. He's still getting his minutes between power play and all that. He's still getting plenty of ice time. Matt Duchene, I mentioned, he leads the team in points. He also leads the team in power play points, and yet he's on the 2nd power play unit. How often do you hear that at any point in the season? Can you even think, John, of a time like what our most highest power point producers on our 2nd unit? It's not very common, right? The Stars have also been very intentional about developing their young players into responsible and 200-foot players, even if it means sacrificing offense and individual stats, which is why you're seeing Robertson put up fewer points and Wyatt Johnston, some of the other guys. Meanwhile, I don't think you're seeing the same thing. And I'd hate to keep throwing shade at the same guys, but from Marner and Pasternak and Panarin, and those guys that are go out and score and we'll kind of figure out the rest of it around your ability to create offense. It's a different system here with Dallas. They're saying play the 200-foot game first, be responsible. And I already mentioned this, but the team's rolling 3 lines basically evenly. The first 3 are just, they're mixing and matches. Guys are in and out of the lineup. Sagan's day-to-day right now. Different guys have missed time. But they're mixing and matching those 3 lines and basically rolling them evenly every single night. And the 4th is getting a few shifts a period. And the 4th is still pretty good, their 4th line. So this is not the same team. When I talked about Jason Robertson's 109 points and Rupe Hintz's 37 goal campaigns and the Stars putting up all these like great, great regular season numbers. It's not the same team at all that got more than 50% of their offensive production from the Robertson, Hintz, Pavelski line. They're deep. They are committed to this style of playing and the whole, you know, a little less for a lot more is more than just a mandate. It's something that's very important to them. So yeah, this team, there's a lot to like. And the last thing I'll add, and I'll hand it back to you, John. I was talking to our friend John in the Slack channel. He's a diehard Stars fan. I said, hey, this is the agenda for tomorrow. Like, what should I know? And because he follows his team religiously. And he pointed this out, and I thought it was really interesting. He said, they're still searching for someone to fill the hole that Joe Pavelski left in the lineup. You think about that experienced number one center who can play in all situations. He has a net front power play presence, obviously, with those deflections. He's good in the faceoff dot. He's defensively responsible. All the things you could want from a guy like him. Not to mention being, you know, having 15 years of experience that he was teaching the young kids. They tried Wyatt Johnston in that spot, and he hasn't looked quite right there. He's not ready for that role just yet. I think Logan Stankoven has been in that spot, and he's put up a ton of points on the Hintz and Pavelski line, or Robertson line. But it's just not quite gelling yet. So I think once they figure out the lines that commit and work really well, the offense will start to come. And then obviously Logan Stankoven is actually leading all rookies in points. He has 10, just about 15 minutes of ice time. Still a young kid. He's still kind of finding his game. But I think we would have thought if there was a guy that was producing a ton of points, it would have been Wyatt Johnston, not Logan Stankoven. So I think there's still a lot to be figured out. But I think the Pavelski point is certainly interesting too.
Yeah, they need to figure out their offense. I think for them to be really, really a juggernaut. Put it into perspective, the Winnipeg Jets, which are on a very storied run to start the season. They're 12-1. The Jets have played two more games, but they've almost doubled them in goals. So they have 30-some goals more than the Dallas Stars in two more games. I don't think the Stars are going to rip off 15 goals in two games. So there's a huge issue there up front. And when you look at that roster, there should be no issue whatsoever. I know it's a part of their game type. They play a very tight game. They don't extend themselves too much. They don't give up odd man rushes. They always have someone covering. But when you look around the league, and the only teams that are below you in goals for are the New York Islanders, the struggling Nashville Predators, the Anaheim Ducks, like it's a big issue that they need to rectify. You can't win unless you're scoring goals, but everything else with this team is fantastic. Jared Oettinger is a star in this league between the pipes, and they have
Jake,
depth.
Yeah.
Jake, I always call him Jared. You do. The back end is just really, really solid.
So I would mention too, like their goals against, they're tied for second and yep, fewest goals against. And so they're not allowing a ton either, which I think is an important point.
No, yeah. And that's how they play their game. I think that's why you're seeing Jason Robertson and Rupe Hintz and all these guys taking hits on their points, just because that's not how they play their game. They can if they want to. If you want to roll them and let her fly, they can put up points, but they know when they get to the playoffs, those games are few and far to come by. You don't see many huge scoring games unless you're the Edmonton Oilers in the playoffs. So they're playing it the smart way, and I think they're a veteran team. They will pick it up, and things will start going their way. Their shooting percentage can't be solid right now, but it's just, you know, it is what it is. They will be a team to reckon with at the end of the way. Just unfortunate right now, they play in a division that two teams have had an incredibly strong start. And this is a thing with the new playoff format. When you come to playoff times, and this was the issue with the Atlantic Division for years and years and years, why the Toronto Maple Leafs just got just the worst end of it year after year playing the Boston Bruins in the first round of playoffs, because the Tampa Bay Lightning would be first and the Bruins and the Leafs would be second and third. Now in the Central, it's like, okay, well, like we know who's going to be first. It's going to be the Winnipeg Jets for the most part. And then the Dallas Stars get stuck with the Minnesota Wild, who's a very strong team. So it's just an unenviable situation there in the Central, because the first round matchup could theoretically be two of the top teams in the NHL going at it. And we saw it last year too in the Metro with the Rangers and those teams up top there. So it's a great problem to have. Winning games and your top players still aren't scoring, and they will figure it out. So, this Central is just, it's a strong division too. It's fun to talk about.
And I even think too, like, this is a great example of how much coaching and systems impact the not just the way the player plays, but the production they do. And like, if you told certain other guys that their only responsibility was going out and scoring, I think the list of guys that reach 100 points might surprise you. Maybe it's a Barzal. If his only responsibility was putting the puck in the net and he said, don't worry about anything else, that's your job, we'll figure out the rest, maybe he's a 100-point guy. Maybe Nick Suzuki is. Maybe Dylan Larkin is. Like, you don't know, because these guys get tasked with so much stuff and there's a system built a certain way. But we see this from Robertson. If Robertson hadn't scored 100 points, and this is who he's been the last few years, you wouldn't think he's capable of it. But at that time, on that line, in that offense, the right thing's happening at 109 points. So it just made me think about that. So I think in conclusion, I think a lot of us, I mean, including fantasy, if you have them in fantasy hockey, you might be frustrated by the lack of production by Robertson and Heiskanen and Wyatt Johnston and Rupe Hintz. It's still a really strong team. They're third, as I mentioned, in the entire league in goals against per game, testament to the system they play, the system, the coaching they have, and Oettinger. And even DeSmith, their backup goalie, has played really well.
Yeah.
I think the offense is going to come. It's going to come in waves. It's not going to be like this sustained, like Florida Panthers 3 years ago type, where you're scoring four or five goals a game. But you are going to have nights where everything goes your way. And then you're going to have nights where you win 1-0. I think both of those are going to be equally important. I think they're just too good not to have those games where they score a bunch. And they're just focused on the postseason. Like Derek Stepan told us a few months ago, as you mentioned, let's just get to the playoffs. That's where our focus is. And we'll see what happens when we get there. So yeah, I think the Stars are still an elite team, and don't let the 7-4 record fool you.
No. And yeah, like you said, Heiskanen will pick it up. He will score a goal at some point this season. He won't be shut out the whole season. He's too good. He's on the first power play unit. This team will figure it out too. But it's going to be good. All right, let's get to some quick hits and get out of here.
Yeah, the first one is scary. Dylan Holloway took a puck to the throat last night, directly off a shot. He finished a shift and he went back to the bench and he had trouble breathing. And it was at the end of the first period, they ended up ending the period early. Mm-hmm. To make sure that he was okay. It's a pretty scary situation. Anything to do with the neck and breathing and all that stuff. So Frank tweeted out this morning that the doctors said he is going to be okay. His airway is unobstructed. And actually, his parents were in the building to watch the game. So they were able to be with him at the hospital. No swelling. Hopefully, he doesn't need any kind of surgery. He doesn't miss too much time. But the most important thing, that he's going to be fine.
Yeah, I don't want to make this about me, but this past Sunday in our men's league game, I got tangled up with somebody in front of my net. I was back checking their sentiment, took my feet out. And so we're laying in front of my goalie, both of us, for like 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds. When people go down, it's a big deal in the men's league. You kind of let them get up and the game halts for a little bit. Their guy has the puck and he's probably face-off dot a little bit closer to the net. And I'm between him and the net. And it's 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds. I'm annoyed because this guy takes my feet out and we're tangled up. And all of a sudden, whack, I get hit right in the back of the head with a puck. Ding dong from the other team decided he could do a lifter and get it over the two of us and try to go bar down on the goalie. Didn't do it. Zipped me right in the back of the neck, like right behind the ear. In the sweet spot. I'm just like,
dangerous spot.
Oh, yeah. I was so mad, Tim. I turn around, I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, are you nuts? Some choice words were had. The ref blew the whistle. I stay on the ice because I'm an absolute juggernaut warrior. He's the centerman still. We win the draw. I wind up a flipping slap shot, tickling the roof. Faked it. He flinched. Tim. I go Maine to Maui, top shelf on the goalie. Oh, it felt so good. It felt nice. So good. It was just one of those moments where I was like, that was pretty cool. Their whole team flinched when I wound up. They're like, he's not going to do this, is he? Is he going to do it? He's going to do it. And I just faked them, boom, gone, coast to coast. Not bar down, but close to it. Very, very good shot. So I just thought of that when Dylan Holloway. By the way, our team's on a little winning streak. We're doing pretty good lately. So we're not.
You haven't talked about it at all.
Last year was not a good year. Is this, I would go to the same team.
This the A-League or the Senior League?
No, the Senior League. The A-League, we won the championship last year. And I just, you know, it's not cheap to play. Like, they keep raising the ice costs, too.
Yeah.
So both teams are like, hey, we need $400 per team. Like, I'm not paying $800. To play a game on Sunday night when I might not make it to every game. So I told the A team, maybe I'll play in the playoffs. But ever since I've done that, I'm being heavily recruited by other teams in the A League. They go, oh, you're not playing with Nutolos. What do you think? You skip on over to this team. So I'm actually considering it because my team last year is very strong. And so I might just be one of those gunslingers and just go from team to team. Whatever team needs. And just go and mix it up a little bit. Because there's no contracts. I'm a free agent after every year, Tim. That's how it works. I don't like to tie myself down. But yes, I play with my church team, my two priests. And we have gotten a lot better. We used to just get worked every single game. But now we've, in our last three, we're 1-1-1. This past week, we should have won. But we got some bad luck between the pipes. Our goaltender, he would even tell you, should have made a couple saves. Shots on goal. I think we must have had 28. They must have had maybe 10. And he gave up 5. So wasn't Mark's best game. That's okay. Everybody has a bad game. All right. What's going on in Boston? You always got to bring up the Bruins at least once a show.
Yeah, not quite as often as you bring up yourself. But yeah, Kevin Weeks reported this week.
Thanks for being here, everybody. Appreciate the support. Tim won't be around anymore. No, go ahead. Kevin Weeks.
Kevin Weeks said, quote, in speaking to sources, several teams are interested in pending UFA after this season. Bruins' Trent Frederick, with his size, speed, toughness, character, and skill, he's drawing attention in the marketplace. I will just, my quick reaction is, yeah, I'm sure they're interested. There's no reason to think they're going to move him. They drafted him in the first round. He's been in the lineup for like 4 or 5 years now. He's a good young player, not quite offensively gifted like we thought he could have been, but it's hard to have like a middle six forward who has that size, who can skate pretty well and is willing to fight. It's hard to find. So I don't see a scenario in which they trade him. Do you?
Yeah, because they have a lot of needs right now. They have how much money tied up for next year? 30, 27, that's 60. They have $70 million tied up for next year already. And that's between what? 12 people. You got to re-sign Brad Marchand. You got to figure out the back end. Your goaltenders are set because you have so much money tied in there, but you have a lot of needs. And you're going to bring back Trent Frederick? I just don't see how that works, Tim, how they figure out the money. And yeah, is he that good? I don't know. He's an okay player. He does his good job, but are you going to pay him $4 or $5 million to play on the third line? That's a question.
I don't know. This is the player that's been a little bit of an enigma, because under different coaches, he's been different players. And I liked when he first came up, he was scrappy and hitting and fighting, and he was at his best. And then I want to say Cassidy basically kind of just reeled him in and said, we want different things from you. And he just doesn't look confident if he's not engaged in that way, which is not unusual for that type of player. Like if they can't do the things that get him going, it's hard for them to get engaged and produce. So, you know, we've seen versions of him where he could be a 20 plus goal scorer. We've seen versions of him where maybe he's a fourth liner, not even a third liner. So he's got a pretty big range, but I'd rather, because of his size and his ability to scrap, and I don't know, his upside that I still hang on to, I'd rather hang on to him and develop him more.
Oh yeah. I think he's a great player. I just don't know if they can, because he will want a big number. He's going to want like Milan Lucic type numbers when he comes to free agency. Will he get it? I don't know. We've seen how the Bruins negotiate it, and it's not good. It's never really goes smoothly, but they should do everything in their power to lock him up. He's a good player. Lock him in for 35 points. He's got some toughness. Like, he's the exact guy you want on your team. So there, we got your Bruins out. That's fine. Okay. Is that all, Tim?
That's it. That's it. We're back on Friday. We are interviewing one of the guys from the Winged Wheel podcast. This is the very popular Red Wings podcast. We're going to argue about the Iser plan. So this should be a lot of fun, John. Hopefully you come prepared, because you know he's going to.
I can't believe we just talked about trade rumors 10 games into the season just so we can get the Bruins on the podcast.
The Bruins?
Yeah, like the Trent Frederick thing. It's 10 games into the season. There's some drawing attention for Trent.
If Kevin Weeks put out this viral rumor, yeah, that I'm right, going to bring it up on the podcast.
Oh, there's lots of rumors that are going around the NHL. You don't bring them up. It's only a Bruins one.
Okay. Another coffee, John. Let's get you a coffee and you'll feel better.
Did you see Tanev rocking Pasta from behind last game and Marchand jumping him?
No.
You're not a Bruins fan?
You know what? I'm less and less of a Bruins fan. I think a combination of not having the way to watch most of the games, this podcast covering all the teams, and then just the Bruins doing a lot of things that makes it hard to be a fan. Yeah, I find myself, you know, following that single team less and less and focusing more on the whole league.
Well, they just got worked by the Leafs 4-0. Like, wasn't even close. It was not a good game whatsoever. It was Matthews awful. Didn't play. Yeah. So the Bruins are in trouble. We talked about them. Oh, they're going to win a couple and they're going to get back in it. They beat the Flyers and the Seattle Kraken. Big deal. They will go on an epic losing streak and they will just be in the dumps. I can't wait for it. I'm very excited. But anyways, everybody, thank you for joining us. We appreciate the support. I apologize for Tim and his Bruins fandom. Kind of ruins the show a little bit for me, but I'll move on. You know, I'll soldier on. I think you should too. Join our Patreon. It's a beautiful thing. Come and chirp Tim in real time. It's a lot of fun. Talk to everybody on Friday. Cheers.